Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Your source for Big Ten Talk, it's Off Tackle Empire!
Welcome to the Blocking Charge Cast, but before we begin, I'm going to take cues from a former Big Ten football coach. I would like to begin by noting that I am a winner, and everybody else that's contributing on here are losers. So please justify your presence on this podcast if you can, because remember, I have a proven track record as a winner.
Well, okay. So what I do is I take the results of the games and the broader goings on and commentary about the sport of the, you know, the Big Ten college basketball, and then I turn it into the content.
So, okay. So it seems to me then, why can't the user just look the game results up themselves?
Well, we put it in a way they can understand that.
Okay. So you physically get the results. So you physically take the results and give them to the user.
Well, no, my Iowa grad does that.
Well, okay. So, but surely you must then produce some of the content.
Well, no, that's my co-host that who does the production and the
what would you say you do here?
I'm a people podcaster. I'm good at podcasting for people.
I don't know what it is about that these people can't understand. Of course, welcome to our basketball coverage. We as always are trying to get a diverse array of opinions on here, especially a diverse array of representations from people that frankly know more about basketball than myself. I'm Steve Braun Thumpasaurus, the Illinois guy. I know not that much about the sphere outside of Illinois, but I have been watching a fair amount of Big Ten basketball. And of course, our primary host who puts all this together is Andrew Krzyzewski over there. We are hoping to get some more opinions here, but for now it appears that that we're right back to this rotation, which is interesting because we're recording this in the middle of a game that I absolutely have to watch. It's Bears Packers. I have my Whitney Merciless jersey on, even though he's probably never going to play another snap for them. And, you know, we were just talking through the Urban Meyer thing right there, where Urban Meyer decided that he was going to really turn this locker room around, turn this coaching staff around by going into a coach's meeting and then declaring that he was a winner and everybody else was losers, and demand that they tell him where in their past they've ever won. Talking to people that have Super Bowl rings as coaching assistants, but
and talking to people that he hired also. It's year one. He had complete carte blanche to build that staff and presumably parts of the front office the way he saw fit. That Shad Khan threw him the keys to the franchise, which, boy, talk about a mistake. But anyway, although this is going to be primarily a basketball podcast, that is kind of the last major story that came out here. Short of just doing a podcast like this every couple days, which is just frankly not plausible for anybody on this site, we're going to check in every couple weeks, give you an idea of where each team is in kind of rapid fire fashion, summarize what's happened so far, and look ahead. We'll finish up basically with a few games you might consult looking ahead, not only for your own team, but if you're interested in seeing what some of the other contenders or interesting teams, or if you just want to watch a train wreck from a certain bad team that you might have it in for in the conference, we'll point out where you might be in for some entertainment value there.
Oh, so, or you just do the Big Ten thing, which is to say you watch the teams play the non-conference, and then when they lose, you're like, oh, damn it, how could you do this to us? you get mad at them for losing, even though you yourself wanted them to lose, but you act like you're really mad that they lost because it hurts you as a conference member.
Yeah, you're impairing the quality of my net, Purdue, when you go out and lose to Rutgers, even though they're also probably going to be at worst a quad two loss by the end of the season. Maybe that's a stretch, but we'll see. In any case, we're here mid-December, so all of the first two games, which is how I refer to these two conference games we play this week, sort of dropped in what used to be the long stretch of cupcake non-con season. I refer to those as the first two. Maybe there's an official term for them or not, but we're going to keep using that term, so that's what we mean by that. Of course, we'll also go through the stuff that happened in the early season tournaments with a bit of a focus on the Big Ten ACC Challenge, that being the most recent one that everybody participated in. There were a couple other teams that still had tournaments going. You know, Maryland and Purdue were in this event today. Purdue had an escape there, speaking of. But most of the other, you know, the Battle for Atlantis, Champions Classic, Maui Jim, all those things happened a few weeks ago. So it's mostly old news, but we'll refer to that stuff as well. So speaking of it, the big story in the Big Ten ACC Challenge, good guys win 8-6 after a long stretch of futility in that challenge early in its existence. The Big Ten has really improved their performance against the ACC in that direct event recently. But honestly, this was a matchup that could have been much more tilted in favor of the Big Ten. Two overtime games dropped to the ACC, and one four overtime game, which really Nebraska, NC State might already be an early candidate for game of the year, not in terms of quality exactly.
Entertainment value. I mean, yeah. It was just a thing to behold, because what ultimately won the game for NC State was simply that they had fresher legs than the Nebraska, who was rapidly running out of players and couldn't really sub people in and out of the game anymore.
Yeah. And once you get to overtime, it's honestly, so the natural comparison here is, well, I mean, that's only four overtimes. Now I think compared to nine overtimes, and sure, no, not on paper, but the thing about basketball overtime is because there are so many more events and possessions per session, it's actually much harder for an overtime.
It took a lot
to
longer
a tie than a football overtime session in college.
The football ones are basically designed almost to keep it going, especially those 2-point ones. What's crazy about that is that you don't have the option to end the game like the way that you used to with the, you know, indefinite score a touchdown and then you have the extra point opportunity. Well, you could then go for two to try to end the game.
Yeah.
Of course, then they take that away from you after that.
Even if you just start on defense and, you know, well, if we hold them to a field goal, we win with a touchdown, for example, like things like that. Or if we don't let them score at all, then we just need to kick the field goal. So if you have an ACC game,
I would have said Big 12, but that was 10 years ago. If you have a modern day ACC game go into the 2-point shootout where both defenses are gassed, it could last forever, but right, this Nebraska NC State game could not, and ultimately Nebraska just could not keep shooting. They just did not have the legs to continue to shoot the ball.
Yeah. Well, NC State definitely has had the best player on the court in that Sebron guy whose first name escapes me, but Purdue got a full, you know, eyeful of him again today. And that's really, I mean, and basketball obviously always favors the team with the best individual talents because there's so few players on the floor. That's definitely the case as the game goes on, where you've got guys fouling out, other guys in foul trouble, guys who have played 40 or 50 minutes. And so you get to a point where everyone's exhausted and it really is just who has the most raw skill and can push their team over the finish line. So anyway, we've jumped a little bit out of order here, but we'll continue kind of at the end there. Nebraska was actually, I mean, I randomized the order that we were going to talk about these teams, but since we already went over Nebraska's game with NC State, we'll go a little bit more in depth with them. So the preseason question for Nebraska is, because as has been the case under Fred Hoiberg, his first two seasons, they very much hit the Yahtzee shaker on their roster. Just a few players carrying over from last year, true, but certainly nothing approaching ideal carryover rates. They bring in more transfers. They add Bryce McGowan's, their most talented freshman recruit by a mile in school history. Also, Wilhelm Breidenbach, the fan who I think is going to become a fan favorite across the conference. Shaggy hairstyle, I think some facial hair, the athletic glasses, that's always going to make you a favorite in my book. The only thing I need for him to do now is have his hairline recede about 40%. And then he's my favorite player in the Big Ten, no question. But he is the fourth most talented recruit in Nebraska history, again, going according to the rankings. So a much more talented Nebraska team. The results really aren't there yet. And it's for some of the same reasons that we've seen these first 2 years, which is they get hammered on the boards by any good rebounding team. And it's really a question of depth and strength on the front line. Because, yeah, Breidenbach is a center. It's helpful to have him, but they don't play him much. Lat Mayen gets a lot of minutes at the five, and he's really a stretch five, not exactly a physically imposing guy. He's got good length and strength, but not somebody who you're going to body up with, you know, the likes of Zach Edey or something like that, right? And so what that means is anytime they go up against a team with a good front line, they're really going to struggle. And in the Big Ten, that means you like your matchup against Minnesota and maybe Penn State, but even they have John Hara. So it's,
well, I mean, Rutgers at home, if you're at home.
Yes, that's right. Cause if Rutgers is away from the rack and whatever bizarre sight lines they've built up there, then yeah, you can expect to hold them under 50, and all you gotta do is get a couple of you guys going and you're fine.
Our other Illinois contributor made this observation, whereas usually what a home court advantage is usually in betting odds worth what for college basketball, about like 4 points.
Yeah. 4 to 5, depending on some of the bigger venues will get a couple more than that. Yeah.
For Rutgers, it's worth about 30 points.
Yeah, pretty much. Right. And you, before we started recording, you were mentioning, even as we're here, the Rutgers and Seton Hall game is ongoing. I haven't checked back in it recently, but
I've been watching it during commercials of the Bears Packers game, which I noticed. See, the Bears actually went down and got points. So instead of using, you know, Bears linebackers or whoever, they actually started using Justin Fields on the going to commercial graphics this time. Wow. He actually earned his way to the cover.
Yeah.
But anyway, Rutgers still trails Seton Hall by 11 as I'm watching this, but yep. Boy, okay. Seton Hall fans went on Twitter and decided to flex on Rutgers for having a very small arena and being mad that Seton Hall closed the upper deck of the New Jersey Devils arena where they play, where they rent, and made me go on Twitter and stick up for Rutgers. And it's
that's
like,
it's a weird flex, right? That's a very strange approach to, oh man, our arena technically has a lot more chairs in it than yours. We don't let people sit in half of them and wouldn't fill it if we did. But technically, our building is larger. I guess that's a thing we're brought, you know.
Dorm room name ass university. Like, come on. That's you're already, because again, your school sounds like a dorm room. You're already in a position where you can't really miss when you go and try and take dunks on people on Twitter. But oh boy, I mean, that's a real own goal right there. And you leave the dunking on Rutgers to the professionals.
Right. This is not, we don't need amateurs, part-timers, you know, moonlighters coming in here. And we've been living this with Rutgers for a better part of a decade.
They scored 5 in a row since I've been watching, to cut it to a 6-point game. But back to Nebraska, they've lost 4 straight now. And at the beginning of the year, they opened up with a 1-point loss against Western Illinois, which was one of a series that has sort of been forgotten as we, you know, as the Big Ten won the ACC challenge. But
yeah,
boy, we started off the very first couple of games that virtually every Big Ten team played, they lost. And there was an awful lot of dunking on predictions of the best basketball conference in the country again, even better this year. And in Nebraska's case, not that they had very high expectations, but they lost to Western Illinois. Illinois, of course, lost their third game to Marquette. Indiana, didn't they lose their first one? Oh, no, they did not. They did not against EMU.
No, they made it pretty close, though. They also had a narrow escape against St. John's, and most of the rest of their games were pretty marshmallowy. So not an overly impressive start for Indiana, but why not? We'll kind of jump around here as the spirit takes us. So we'll go ahead and move on to Indiana next, then. So as per usual, their non-conference slate, not exactly all that imposing. They did stub their toe on a pretty bad Syracuse team in two overtimes in the challenge. And then in the first two in conference play, they acquired and then mysteriously misplaced a 20-plus point lead over Wisconsin on the road. The curse of the Kohl Center continues for Indiana. Don't know which curd-eating old Roma woman the Hoosier fan base offended, but make amends, make it right. And it's strange, a brand decided, and maybe this is just, I don't know if it's because I'm watching a lot more games on BTN, it feels like, or sometimes even if I have, even if I'm watching Michigan State games, I might have the volume off, I'm doing other things. But it feels as though a player the caliber of Trace Jackson Davis, having some of the performances he is flying kind of under the radar. Like if, when I think about the Big Ten and all the excellent big men in it, he's just like a guy that I sort of skip over in my head, probably because I assumed he would be one and done or certainly would have left before this year. Like that he's still around with, you know, he's going to have great measurables. His interior defense has gotten tremendous. Maybe not quite the face-up shooter yet that the NBA would be looking for, but at this point, it's like, I don't know how much Mike Woodson's system is going to develop that particular skill in him. So I was very surprised that he came back, but he's the guy that you have to remember when you play Indiana. Oh yeah, that guy.
Yeah, and of course, Indiana had their own multi-overtime heartbreaking loss to an ACC opponent in Syracuse, and that's their only other blemish, though. They rebounded with a convincing win over Merrimack, had handled Nebraska, of course, as part of the first two that
you
they
know,
were calling them.
That Merrimack game was today, and I actually caught a pretty good portion of it. And I will say Merrimack fought Indiana much longer than that score would indicate. So the final margin ends up being a 32-point win, and you assume, oh, they've got their end-of-the-bench scholarship guys and walk-ons playing 8-10 minutes in the second half. No, they needed – it was a close game into about 15 minutes, 13 minutes left in the second half, and then Indiana really started to pull away. Part of that was just that, look, Merrimack is a very slow-tempo team, although actually when they were having success in the first half was kind of when they sped things up and took earlier shots in the shot clock. But they're sort of fun, and they're new to Division I, so they're still building. You expect them to play this sort of conservative, how do we improve our odds kind of basketball, where it's not as bad as watching like a Tony Bennett UVA or anything, but they abandon the offensive boards. They get everybody back in transition. They slow the game down as much as they can, understanding that the more possessions they're in, the worse off they're going to be. But anyway, so Indiana did handle Merrimack in the end, but it was really just because Race Thompson and Trace Jackson Davis were just too physically imposing for Merrimack to do anything about it the whole game.
Race and Trace sounds like a game plan, but like not involving players with those names, right? Doesn't it just like sound like a plot? Like it's like, you know, like the run and shoot or whatever.
Or like a season long arc or an episode title from iRobot or something. Yeah. Or Mr. Robot. iRobot's the
Jackson worst. Davis is averaging 3.4 blocks a game, which is anything over three is pretty
noteworthy. For sure. He's probably going to be a strong contender for defensive player at the year. They certainly play him large enough minutes. I mean, the only thing, like, I love Marcus Bingham's play, but he still doesn't get the minutes load to have the volume of stats that a guy like Jackson Davis is going to. And he's taken a big step forward there. Like, he's always had the physicality to do it. But Woodson's staff has visibly improved him on that front. And it's the other thing is, you know, for the last couple of years of the Archie Miller era, it was Indiana was such a bad shooting team that even with two guys as good as Jackson Davis and Thompson in there, it was like, well, teams just have to mob the paint and nothing about this is going to work because there's nobody who you have to respect on a kickout. Even when they do have guys who can drive, the lane's clogged because there's no threat of the outside shot. It's not as though they've radically improved their outside shooting. Miller Kopp has actually helped them a lot in that. I know when he transferred away from Northwestern, you kind of got to chuckle a lot of that, but he's helped them a lot. He has a little bit more shooting gravity than anybody they've had the last couple of years.
Oh, no, I only thought it was funny because I just think the idea of somebody you know, going up in the world by transferring within their conference is, it's fair. I mean, I don't know that it's necessarily a even trade for Peyton Ramsey, given what Northwestern football was able to do with him. But it's always funny when bad things happen to Northwestern, and that was a bad one that happened to them. And I did think that he would be good for them, for Indiana, as a role player. Definitely value to add.
Yeah, four results yet to be determined. If Indiana makes the tournament, which I think has to be their baseline goal for the first season, and you know, if they're in the top half of the Big Ten and he's a big part of that, you know, as their top shooting option, I have to think they end up feeling okay about the trade. It's not the same as winning a division title, but it's a much tougher neighborhood to win the Big Ten in basketball than it is to win the Big Ten West in football, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. If there were, oh God, can you imagine if there were divisions in football and there was a really bad one, or in basketball and there were a really bad one?
Well, I assume what we would do every time the dominant division won the title, which would be every time, would be a couple people would wring their hands and ask if it was time to redraw the divisions online, and the conference would pretend that was impossible, even though it's already happened once in the barely 10-year history of having divisions. So that's probably how that would go. I'm glad that we don't have to deal with that now that it's basketball season.
See, what I would do is I would put the Big Ten outer and the Big Ten inner. So you want to have right now, you'd put Rutgers, Maryland, Penn State, Nebraska, right? You're going to the boundaries, right? Nebraska, Minnesota. I guess you could maybe sneak Northwestern in there if you want. I'm just kind of trying to hammer as many bad teams in there. I mean, you could put Iowa in there then.
Yeah, for sure. And that's as good a place to jump next as any. So Iowa evidently spent every last ounce of energy they had taking down Virginia. And that's doing God's work, you know, respect for that. But it also evidently left them completely exhausted. How about this for a stretch of the schedule, by the way? So as we just mentioned, the Big Ten ACC Challenge, they go to Virginia, win that game by 1 point, actually scored in the first half of that game, scored the most points in a half that have ever been allowed by a Tony Bennett Virginia team, if I remember correctly. Or maybe it's since a given date, but there was a stat involved there. I just certainly don't remember it. So they win that game on the road, but then they go into Big Ten play. First two games at Purdue, home against Illinois. And then after those two, both losses, they go to Iowa State. And I don't know if you're going to find a four-game stretch in the country tougher than that, because Iowa State, as we'll remember, is powered by a couple of Big Ten castoffs that changed teams because their coaches got fired. Isaiah Brockington from Penn State and Gabe Kalschauer from Minnesota, and Brockington lit Iowa on fire in that game. I watched a good part of it, and it was just Keegan Murray has had a fantastic start to the season. He was a disaster against Iowa State, and it also was fairly well proof positive of the blueprint to deal with the Hawkeyes, which is you just swarm Murray anytime he gets the ball, make somebody else prove they can beat you, and they don't have enough guys who are capable of doing that right now to get that kind of game plan.
As tough as that stretch is, I think that the point where Iowa fans maybe felt the best was maybe during the Purdue game, where they played without Keegan Murray and generally just kind of battled them to a 7-point loss. And they felt very, very good about themselves, especially then going and being by the time the game started, it was 5.5-point favorites against Illinois, who everybody had mostly written off since they got their ass kicked by Cincinnati. And one of the most bizarre basketball games I've ever seen. There's this, you know, kind of video game thing called min-maxing, where you don't put any of your character build points into certain attributes, instead opting to maximize some that you're going to make use of. You saw that at work here, because Iowa put on the press and decided to not even try to rebound with Illinois. So yeah, they got 14 more turnovers in Illinois. 18-4 was the difference. And then got out-rebounded by over 30.
Yeah. And so maybe I should have included them on the list of teams that Nebraska looks forward to, in the sense of, well, can we physically hang with this team on the boards? But yeah, so the concept you're referring to, the min-maxing thing, is just you know, you're basically leaning into being really good at some things and really terrible at others.
Yeah, and if you're not good at that one thing, you're not even going to try, not even going to bother, right? You just spend all your energy doing the things that you're good at.
Yeah, and it, look, you know, there's probably going to be some instances where that works. I don't know if they're going to apply that kind of, I mean, really, the way they applied that much pressure against Illinois was because Curbelo was out, and a couple of, like, Illinois also is starting to play Alfonso Plummer. Bigger minutes, understandable because he's a lights out shooter, but he not so much a good.
Yeah, he's very, very good at shooting. Not so much as a ball handler. He's got kind of Brandon Paul energy. I love Brandon Paul, but there were times when Brandon Paul would have mental lapses as a ball handler, bringing it up the court. And you know, Trent Frazier finally had a really good game in Illinois' last game, but he wasn't really on against Iowa, and so. The question of who's going to bring the ball up the court didn't really get answered in the Iowa game because they had back-to-back 10-second violations in the backcourt.
Yeah, well,
at one point during that game,
they had power forward Coleman Hawkins involved with breaking the press as one of the guy in the middle of the floor on a couple of possessions. I'm just looking at it, I'm like, how is that the solution? Like, you got to have somebody. I mean,
Coleman Hawkins is, in my opinion, a budding JaVale McGee in that is a guy that. not quite the athlete, but he's a guy that's capable of doing a lot of really good things for you and being a really good role player. And then just sometimes he just kind of momentarily forgets what sport he's playing.
A little bit of a golden retriever energy to him at times, for sure. Where you want to set him up to do things that involve him bounding around, using, like you said, that energy and that springiness.
Very, very sophomore-y right now, I could say. His game is unpolished, but definitely I don't think there was a game script that called for Coleman Hawkins to be bringing the ball up the floor.
No, I doubt it. And so we'll continue on kind of with the rest of the story for Illinois. I mean, as we referenced with the Curbelo injury, you know, Kofi Coburn suspended a couple games right at the beginning for not waiting long enough to sell memorabilia, even though it was totally legal a couple months later. A couple other injuries that have happened for the Illini. Basically, they started the season by just falling down a flight of stairs. And you mentioned, taking a pretty ugly loss to Cincinnati.
Really terrible loss. They got their ass kicked. I mean, the Marquette loss was also one where I think it was a call late in the game that went against us. And those kind of things happen. You know, you win games like that, you lose games like that. I think Coburn makes a big difference in that game. But in Cincinnati had a pair of guys big enough to effectively double Kofi because there's really nobody that can take Kofi one-on-one in college ball. The question is, do you have a combination of two guys that can stop Kofi in the paint? And Arizona did, and Cincinnati did. And in this case, then we had to run the Hunter Dickinson offense from last year's Michigan team. But with Kofi Coburn, whose career high in assists in a game is 2. And that just didn't work because the threes were not falling and we couldn't find any other way to score points on offense. Fortunately, we were able to win the next game against Bruce Weber coaching Mark Smith at Kansas State.
Yeah, a game which, for the record, you were 100% confident Illinois was going to lose. And in your phrase, send Illini fans straight to hell.
That would have been just a truly horrifying game to lose.
Here's what I want to know.
It came down to the wire, though.
Yeah, it did. Well, hold on. So what was the final margin there? Because I really don't think it was as close as that, at least not in my
record. It was an 8-point margin, but I think that part of that was just, you know, you get to fouling late. Illinois.
Illinois did
have like a, you know, a cushion of between 4 and 10 for a lot of this. Second half.
Sure. So it's one of those games where it's close enough that you have to play it out, as you say, do the free throw shooting thing. And I understand, sure, that, yeah. With
holy shit.
Being a major part of your team, that's a problem. What's that?
The turnover numbers for Illinois versus Kansas State, 18 by Illinois and 4 by Kansas State. So Illinois has committed that exact same number of turnovers versus their opponent and are 2-0 when doing so.
You got to remember, you're talking to a Michigan State fan. Whatever turnover numbers you're going to come up with are not going to impress me.
yes, but also that they're 2-0 while putting up that exact margin.
Oh, yeah. Michigan State's won plenty of games this year, turning it over 15, 18, 20 plus times. So I guess this is good as a segue as any. We talked about your team. Now it's time to talk about mine. So as per usual, Michigan State under the Tom Izzo school of insane scheduling opens up the season with number three, Kansas. They lost and by a pretty decent margin at the end, but they also gave Kansas a fight for really about 30 minutes or so before the Jayhawks stepped. And really what it came down to was Kansas has Oshai Ajabi and Michigan State doesn't have a guy like that. They really don't. I think if we play them again later in the season, things might go better. Rest of the non-con, they had a one-off game with Butler. That was a win. It kind of a down Butler team this year, according to most projections, but we'll see. They usually end up doing pretty well. And then in a loaded battle for Atlantis Field, thrilling back and forth, you know, one at this pulled out victories against Loyola and against UConn. And then who they get in the final, but Baylor. And that game, they kept it close for a bit less time. Really, Baylor took the upper hand late in the first half. MSU was in a good position, led something between 5 and 10 points, if I remember right, for a good part of the first half. But there came a point where it's like, oh man, Baylor's got a lot of dudes, like a lot of dudes. It was a different feel from the Kansas.
You felt like Steve Adazio out there. A lot of dudes, man.
More in the context of Steve Adazio's Boston College playing like a Clemson. Well, maybe that's overplaying it too much because it's not like the gap was just so
dudes
bad.
To the left of you, dudes to the right. There you were, stuck in the middle with you.
Stuck in the middle with dudes, I think.
With dudes. With dudes.
So it was one of those things where it was like, all right, I'm pretty sure I'm watching my team lose to the national champion this year. I came away from that game with the impression Baylor's probably going to repeat. Nothing I've seen from the other team since then has changed my mind. But anyway, it was a thing where you get what should be a couple of quadrant one wins. Oh, hey, that's going to be a house call for you. As we're, again, both, oh, Justin Fields just got juked in the open fields. Yeah, I hate to see it.
Well, you know, what I've noticed about this is that because what I saw there was like two straight drives for the Bears starting at midfield. And yeah, I've just now seen that pick six, which, you know, see, I haven't been, even though the Packers trailed 10-0, I didn't say anything, you know, about any concern in this because on the second play of the game, a Bears defensive end, I think it was, did the title belt thing standing over Rodgers. And look, I don't think that it's a thing where it's like, oh, you shouldn't do that or anything. It's just that the fact of the matter is,
that's the pettiest human being in the building. Probably the pettiest human being within 500 miles of
that has generally, it's just generally not gone very well for division rivals, but at least that dude still has an ACL right now. I was at the game where Steven Tulloch blew out his ACL doing the discount double check.
Huh. So to get back to Michigan State, speaking of green teams, I've liked what I've seen for the most part. They had a very favorable draw in the first two games. Although I will say a road trip to Minnesota, even when they're viewed as being kind of down, is not an easy win by any means. And Minnesota is certainly more of a live wire than I think anyone expected. But they win that game. They beat Penn State handily at home. And so now I've got a couple of cupcakes before they get back into it. And they've got great balance. I think Gabe Brown is probably who you would view as the top dog, the guy who you can generally expect, you know, that 13 to 15 points a game kind of thing. But after that, they've got to sell five or six other guys, you know, seven maybe, who you could expect to get double figures from if they're having a good game. Could be seen as both a good or a bad thing. Because on the one hand, if you're in a tight game, the question is, well, who do you look to for that last shot? But it also kind of answers itself, which is, well, whoever's having the good game that day also makes them more resistant to foul trouble, which is always going to be a concern with Tom Izzo's teams. They have had really bad turnover issues, but those are getting better in the last week or two. And I think a big part of that, a lot of the turnovers, first of all, there are games where you have like two or three times guys like stepping out of bounds because they're in all these neutral site courts they're not familiar with and stuff. And the other thing is they really completely changed over their point guard position from last year. So Tyson Walker is a player who had a lot of good games at Northeastern, but had never played with these guys before. And AJ Hogard was a freshman of last year's team who really didn't play very much. So as they've gotten more comfortable, the turnovers have gone down. Walker at times looks like a dynamic distributor and floor general, scores a little bit, but certainly not the way he did at Northeastern. But certainly looks a little better integrated. I mean, even Joey Hauser has had a good couple of games here after what had to be one of the most disappointing debut seasons of a, you know, big time transfer prospect that I've ever seen last year, and a pretty rough start to this year too. If they can get even league average play from him for 15 minutes a night, at this point you happily take it. And that's kind of really the last problem that they've got. So it's been, I can't complain too much. Yeah, they've got a couple losses on the register already, but that's just the way Izzo approaches the non-conferences. Let me get as many difficult opponents in as I can to simulate the tournament.
Well, I mean, look, what I didn't hear in there is anything about struggling to bring the ball up that really can compete with, say, losing to Arizona because of a 5 seconds closely guarded violation.
No, that there's never quite like that. No, it was just, again, Kansas, they weren't ready for a team like that. I honestly think maybe if they played again now, Michigan State would, I'd probably see 60-40% chance they win that game. Baylor is a different animal. Maybe by the end of the season, if they continue on the curve they're on, Michigan State could handle a team like that. They're certainly not there yet, though.
Yeah, that note about losing that Arizona game, though, is that I didn't mention that one. And the only thing is that when you're Illinois and you've made a big comeback against Arizona and you're down three, you've got to give the ball to Williams because Williams could tie it with a three. All I'm saying is if you really they were in position to recreate the 2005 comeback and they had a guy named Williams that's good at shooting threes. Now, the other game that I'm watching, of course, during the commercials is Rutgers at Seton Hall. Mm-hmm. Now, that one, Seton Hall's just taken a 13-point lead. So we don't necessarily have to get to that one to Rutgers until that game is ended. But
yeah, we can wait. They are at the under four media timeout in the second half.
Yeah, so it looks like it's going to be over soon unless the Gers has some road juice. But going back to what I said about the Big Ten embarrassing themselves in the early part of the season, perhaps one of the bigger signs was Penn State getting their ass absolutely kicked by UMass. Penn State not expected to be a standard bearer, but holy shit, what a terrible game.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing is UMass, again, not projected to be more than a middle of the road A-10 team. They did not play the most difficult non-con schedule, did Penn State? Really, their only kind of profile games were LSU and then Miami in the challenge. They lost both of those. They kept it reasonably close against Miami, but that's not
a game. And LSU. I mean, those were both 5-point losses.
Yeah. Well, and so LSU always has the talent that you expect. Oh, boy. There he goes. You're a couple seconds behind me, so I hope I didn't just give something away. At least that's what it sounds like.
That certainly did sound like, well, look, somebody's going to go in some direction. Okay. That's what I know.
Well, I'll refrain from further commentary on the game, though. What I will just say to give you a hint of what is about to happen is I played the Packers defense tonight. So well, anyway,
that was a pretty reasonable play to make. I mean,
yeah. The Bears are trash. And then when I turned this game on, the first thing I saw was Jason Peters getting helped off the field. I was like, oh boy, shutouts in the bank. And then they drove down the field, got that field goal, and scored a touchdown on their next drive. And well, you know, so
The only difference between this one and Brady and Tom Brady's game winning touchdown is that Justin Fields actually had to throw this one over the middle to his man that was 5 yards down the field and had already beaten the whole defense.
Well, yeah, but he also did the thing where he threw it in stride so he didn't have to slow down. So that's, I didn't see the Brady play you're referring to, but that was an impressive throw kind of on the run. So we were talking about Penn State. And again, the fact that we're desperately jumping into Bears football talk instead, that tells you. So I will say that for what it's worth, I think Shrewsbury is getting about the most that you can reasonably expect out of this roster. He did kind of a similar thing to Mike Woodson, where when he's hired on, he did a pretty good job of convincing the previous guy's players to give him a shot. Now, not everybody stayed. We mentioned Brockington left for Iowa State. Jabari Wheeler transferred in conference to Ohio State.
Well, then there was Trent Buttrick, who transferred to UMass and again kicked the living shit out of Penn State.
Yeah, which is weird. Like, I wonder if there's some story that, like, I don't know, like maybe he's the guy where Shrewsbury was like, yeah, I'm good, you can go.
He's just, I mean,
like that, like he does.
And then he's just out here pulling out this whole bag of butt tricks on them.
Yeah, well, because the thing is, they really need him.
Like
John Hara's been really good in the front court, but he can't do it all himself. And right now, they basically need 35 plus strong minutes a game for him. And it was, I think it was the Michigan State game, but I was watching Penn State recently, and Hara had a good game at that point. But second half, man, even like 10, 12 minutes left, he looked gassed. And that's an issue you're going to have, right? Because they have a carryover from last year with Hara, and Seth Lundy came back. They've still got Sam Sessoms, ASMR legend.
Sam Sessoms.
We'll just go ahead and get a nice clean audio clip around that for all of our... We know that we attract a diversity of listeners. And they've also gotten a couple pickups in Jalen Pickett and Cornwall, who have given them some help. Pickett was pretty good against Michigan State, but again, kind of just sort of Big Ten league average guys. Like, they didn't exactly go and pick up instant impact stars. It was more just stabilizing the roster. Plainly, they intend to build more through your more traditional high school recruiting. Still a team that's going to be pretty shorthanded most of the time. They'll probably, I mean, this is a blood and spiders league once again. It has been really the Big Ten zodiac from a football perspective. There are 3 years that it might cycle through. There's the year of blood, and there is the year of spiders, and there is the year of both. And most years it is the year of both. It's not like a 3 year rotation. It's like, I don't know, every 8 years or so, it's a little more chalky. It's only a year of spiders this year, and that there are like four really difficult teams, and kind of like this exact same concept for year of blood. Like, it's really just the same thing, but then most of the time it is blood and spiders where, yeah, you know, there are some teams better than others, but also you can lose to anyone.
So, well, I mean, who were the two teams that we said were contenders? The top tier of contenders was Michigan and Purdue, and they both have conference losses.
They do. Let's see. Of those, who's the more interesting? Well, you know, I just watched most of Purdue's game today. We mentioned them in passing. We'll go ahead and start with Purdue as between those two. So I thought they were the clear-cut favorite to win the conference coming into the year. What we saw late in the season from Jaden Ivey seemed to indicate he was going to be this ball-dominant guard. He's got NBA size, driving ability, distribution skills. Travion Williams coming back, an absolute, like, I'm surprised there's no salt and pepper in his beard. He's been around forever, willed them to wins against big time opponents. Zach Edey, kind of like Ivy, also really came on last year. There are a few guys in the conference, I know who some of them are, but not all of them, who played in the U19 tournament with the national team this year. Edey was one of them. And it supposedly had a huge, like a quantum leap forward in his development. I think the other two guys were Johnny Davis and Keegan Murray. So if you think about who are the breakout young stars in the Big Ten this year, you draw that connection. The guys who played in that tournament all really benefited from it. And so Purdue, as per usual, tons of size. They have the dominant ball guard in Ivy. He's not the same kind of player as Carson Edwards was, but I think he can have the same kind of impact in certain games.
Hey, they also just got a commit from a 7'2" center.
Yeah, what a shrimp.
The parade will continue.
Yeah, Swedish guy, William Berg, I believe. So, you know, he's only a high schooler. He could very well end up as big as Edie. Yeah,
very well could. Yeah, so Purdue definitely did a lot of impressive damage in the non-conference.
Yeah.
And course, you know, they beat down Florida State and then beat Iowa, you know, a tough effort from this Iowa team, you know, that was playing on the road. And then they went to Rutgers.
Yeah, well, so before we go, I mean, I don't want to shortchange Boiler Nation on their wins. Give them credit. Number 5 Villanova was a neutral site game, I think they played. also beat North Carolina in the ACC Challenge.
Yeah, they've played teams that are going far in the tournament and beaten them. The Purdue absolutely,
and also and also Florida State, which if you know is not necessarily taking that seriously, still a massively talented program.
And Purdue absolutely has some wins over definite tournament teams, probably a couple of Sweet 16 teams.
And then there's the trip to Rutgers, and this is again why we mentioned like. At first, the thing with the rack, aka well, now the discount Subway Center or whatever they call it,
Jersey Mike's,
just like talk about leaning into type, where it was showing on naming rights to
Jersey Mike's
to a crappy Subway chain. So it's just, but anyway, they do go to the rack and lose, back and forth game. I thought, I mean, in the last 30 seconds. You could have thought on three different occasions that Purdue had this game won. Oh, no, Rutgers has this game won. Oh, no, Purdue has this game won. I mean, I think Travion Williams banked in his high degree of difficulty shot to take the lead with like 3.4 seconds or something like that. And so Rutgers has no timeouts left. They inbound it. Harper gets the ball, dribbles. Has to like Euro step through a couple guys, you know, travel if you're a traditionalist, whatever.
He took a highly contested half court heave.
Yeah, two guys on him and just
rattled it home.
Nothing but the bottom. Well, I guess back iron, but still, it gets home. And that, by the way, is an acceptable court storming. It continuing over the trend from football season, ton of court storming this year. Understandable. People who are deprived of a lot of joy the last couple of years. And so now, very much more willing to be like, no, I'm going to be on the field and celebrate this and make a memory for myself. And okay, that's fine. But yeah, beating number one at home, absolutely. No matter who you are, you're allowed to do that if you want.
However, Rutgers did not fare so well against Seton Hall. As that game is wrapped, they lost by roughly 10. I don't know if that was the exact margin. Okay, it was 12. Just couldn't close the gap against the Pirates, who do have some fairly impressive wins of their own, but
yeah, I'm seeing a 77-63 final.
Okay. Well, what I mean, it was functionally 10,
yeah,
and then
as you mentioned, the free throw thing kind of blows out the margin a little bit at the end.
Rutgers had a weird start, holding off Lehigh by 3 points, winning against Merrimack 48-35 for some reason.
Yeah, probably a more hideous win than any other losses. Although, I mean, that very much remains to be seen because in addition to UMass, they had a three-game skid in the non-con where they lost to DePaul. They lost to Lafayette. Like, these are not good losses.
53-51 to Lafayette. They were able to solve a few more of Trent's butt tricks than was Penn State, but they still lost.
And it's just, it's been a thing, like, teams have succeeded in this league without having great offense, right? But even the very hardest to watch Wisconsin teams still had Jordan Taylor, right? And I've been thinking about that era recently a lot because, and we'll pivot over to Wisconsin next. When I see this year's Wisconsin team and what Johnny Davis is doing there, it makes me think of Jordan Taylor, Wisconsin, where it's like, oh, they have one guy who is great and capable of scoring. And they need him to do everything. But my point is that that kind of basketball can succeed, but you got to be so good at everything else. Like, you have to be great rebounding, great defensively, great at selling your terrible flops, can't turn the ball over yourself. And then that's how you survive on offensive margins that way.
Miles Johnson was just such a huge loss for this team.
Turned out, yeah.
He really was the, you know, kind of, held that. I mean, he was perfect for the style of play that they have.
He was very much their spiritual core, right? Like, and that's an odd thing to say on a team that has Geo Baker, who once again is hurt, and an impact guy like Rod Harper. But
those guys are the leaders, but Johnson seemed to really embody what Steve Peichel Rutgers is.
Yeah, and on the court, he was, the stuff that he did was way more important to succeeding with their style of play than what you get from Harper and Baker. Which is to say, at times, inefficient shot making.
A bizarre sentence to say, Rutgers defeated Clemson in a rematch of their round of 32 game, or no, of their first round game in the NCAA tournament. Isn't that a weird thing to say?
it can't be a thing that happens very often just by luck of the draw.
And then it turns out I've attended a Rutgers game this year. I've watched quite a bit of Rutgers up close.
You watched them get absolutely whitewashed by your Fighting Illini.
Yeah, the first conference game back for the Orange Crush in a long time. And the first time I'd been to the State Farm Center since it got that name and then got renovated. I think the cool thing about that venue is, one, it looks like a sweet-ass mushroom, but two, it just looks so big inside because the roof is so high because, again, it is a dome. So it has that look, you know, when you see like old pictures of basketball from the 70s and it's like, oh, it's just like this mist up in the upper reaches of the rafters because it looks so far away. You kind of get that feeling at State Farm Center. I really like it. Underrated venue, but.
So yeah, it was.
Yeah, not Rutgers went on the road. That's what happened. They went on the road.
Well, right. And it was not a great start to the season for them. They're clearly going to pick up a few more home wins that'll kind of sustain belief in what Pikel is doing. But as you mentioned, at some point, this home road split thing can't be this extreme. You have to win games on the road.
Yeah. See, what Purdue didn't have at Rutgers place was thousands of kids bullying Paul Mulcahy for 40 minutes. Boy, I was impressed at how mad we still are at him.
I guess, man. I think it's better to like have stuff like that go. But all right, we got to keep this thing moving to keep it timely here. So we did bring up Wisconsin there by means of comparison. Gross. They seem to be pretty okay again this year. Mentioned, though, that offensively, boy, it is Johnny Davis, and sometimes a second guy shows up, but that's about it.
They were one of the teams that contributed to the early run of kind of embarrassing Big Ten games. The Big Ten didn't acquit itself very well in the Gavitt games. It was Wisconsin took a 63-58 loss to Providence, but other than that, held up pretty well, knocking off number 12 Houston.
Well, right. They went straight from there to the Maui Gym where they beat Texas A&M. And then, as you say, Houston, where they got out to a huge lead over Houston. I think it was like 20 or so, like 18, 20, 22 points or something like that. And then they had to hold on for dear life because Houston basically just started flinging up any half decent shot they could get and then attacking the offensive glass. And that's been their recipe for success. And so to hold them off for that one was impressive. They got a good win over St. Mary's. They beat Georgia Tech in the challenge, although closer than you would have thought that game would be. And just when I was starting to get, they get into conference play. So first of all, they beat Marquette, but Marquette hasn't been, you know, they're clearly going to be a little bit different of a thing under Shaka Smart than they were with Buzz Williams. And then they get into conference play. They fall behind by 20 to Indiana, as we mentioned when we talked about the Hoosiers, but they come back and pull that win out. It had just gotten to the point where I was like, all right, I guess I have to acknowledge Wisconsin's pretty. And then Ohio State blew their wheels off yesterday. And the game was competitive for most of the first half, went back and forth, but OSU really tore it open.
Been a lot of expectations whiplash so far this year, hasn't there?
Yeah, man, it's still, and you know, relative to the total body of the season, that's not all that unusual. We're basically at the same point in the basketball season as we are when we get to the end of the non-conference in football, where it's like, all right, you've got, depending on when your bye is, you've got like three or four games of data, like a lot of conflicting results, and good luck trying to use the transitive property, I think, as everybody's beating everybody else. You just need more data points for things to sort out. And by the time we get into, you know, end of the year, first couple weeks of January, we'll have a better idea who's who.
Hey, in a complete non sequitur, I'm going to address this comment to any Maryland football fans listening to this. Just so you know, years and years and years after Ron Zook is finally gone from your program, your special teams will still be terrible. It will take you maybe 8 years to even have a chance to have not terrible special teams. I can tell you this because that was the case for Illinois, and it certainly is the case for the Green Bay Packers.
You just yielded.
Who just cannot power wash the smell of Ron Zook out of the special teams. It was only a matter of time before they yielded one. They yielded like a 50-yarder and a 40-yarder on returns.
Yeah,
I guess. Holy shit, this is just preposterous. Just kick it out of bounds at this point and let your defense do some shit. Well, you just never, ever, ever, ever let Ron Zook coach special teams because you it's going to be in there long after he's gone.
Referring, of course, to what you just witnessed live. I saw a few seconds ago, kept my poker face pretty good, I think. I managed to keep just talking about Wisconsin basketball like it didn't happen. Because I do, I have a little bit of Packers sympathy at this point, honestly. I think it's
because you're a Michigan State basketball fan.
Yeah, kind of. I mean,
team that sometimes people are like, oh, well, this other team, I think it's their year. And it's always kind of Michigan State's year.
Yeah, well, it mostly good, but probably not winning the big game as much as they should. I was going to say that I kind of generally root for the Packers because I want you to be mentally healthy, and this seems to be a big part of that. But anyway, you said could be true as well.
But I just so much, you know, and again, sure, you have your frustrations with what Michigan State has done in the Final Four and with very talented tournament teams, but you'd much rather be in that situation than be, say, like a diehard Rutger basketball fan. Well, maybe not after the
Yeah, it's no. Right? Very much first world problems, and I try to keep that in mind because, again, I know that Tom Izzo's time is not going to last forever, and that whoever comes after him, very unlikely that they'll be as good.
Yep, I know we're spoiled as hell. I wanted another Super Bowl, but man, I already got two in my life, and I got a lot of bad memories, but a lot of great memories were made on the way to those.
And the other thing, karmically speaking, is that it really kind of looks like Michigan State pulled off the impossible in replacing D'Antonio with Mel Tucker. To expect something like that to happen for basketball, although I will say that my coach crush, Nate Oates, did pull out a thrilling game, Alabama and Houston, and at some neutral site. It was at Alabama. It was a home game for Alabama. So back and forth, two really good teams. If you're interested at all in getting a wider exposure to college basketball, I know some of you out there are going to say, oh, Calvin Sampson, team's fun to watch, though. And same thing for Alabama. So Nate Oates would be on the top of my list. But anyway, we're getting way off track here. Let's resume.
Point is, Wisconsin also receiving votes. Where we think they'll end up.
Because they were 22nd before this. I mean, the escape at home against Indiana, I don't think it's going to get them much credit. And they did get handled pretty well by Ohio State.
Indiana was also receiving votes.
They were. We already talked about them, though, so we're not going back to that.
No, I know. I'm just saying that bolsters, you know, Wisconsin's credibility for holding them off.
Yeah. So maybe they'll end up hanging around I don't know what some of the non-conference teams did at the fringe of the rankings. But anyway.
Hey, let's talk about some comic relief.
I was going to talk about Ohio State.
Oh, okay.
We get to the comic relief after that.
Yeah. Let's do one more serious one.
Yeah. So Ohio State, I mentioned earlier that Iowa had this stretch where it's like, I don't know how if you can do that. Ohio State didn't have all these in a row, but they scheduled their non-conference pretty impressively. They did take a loss in an in-state trip to Xavier. They beat Seton Hall, though. It feels like half the league has played Seton Hall at this point.
Yeah, I was noticing that.
There's always like two or three Big Ten teams that play Seton Hall. Understandably so. They're a tough, you know, well-constructed team. They always have good physicality. Ohio State also lost a game to Florida. And again, another one of these neutral site tournaments. I think that one was it in the Bahamas? No, I don't remember. But in any case, they had a good back and forth game with Florida, lost on a half court heave as time expired. So that's already two potential contenders in the Big Ten who have lost heartbreaking games as time expired.
I just cracked a Bell's Bright White, even though we're not talking about Iowa yet.
Yeah. well, speaking of bright whites, probably the signature game of the season, certainly for Ohio State, maybe for the conference, depending on what you think of Purdue's wins. Ohio State handled Duke and Paolo Banchero, presumed top three draft pick. Oh my goodness, Devontae Adams is good. So that was their non-con. They handled that stretch. You know, again, 2-2, maybe that loss at Xavier doesn't necessarily age that well, but it's not terrible. On the court, big thing for them has been EJ Liddell taking the star turn, like a potential All-American type of guy that his potential has always hinted at. And watching him, I was like, all right, so what are they doing differently that's made this possible? And I think this is where I, you know, reveal the lack of X's and O's knowledge I have, but from a sort of big picture standpoint, they're playing Zed Keymore. And I know you remember him because of his fantastic name.
Yes, it's a thing that Canadians have on their keyboards next to the X key.
And there were some flashes from him last year. I was like, ah, man, they might have found a guy, but they didn't play him very much. And they, I don't remember if they've actually inserted him in the starting lineup or if they're bringing him off the bench and Kyle Young technically starts, but they kind of split the minutes or what it is. But when Key is out there, they're able to keep Liddell off of the matchup with the opponent's biggest, most physical big guy. And he's had some trouble with that in the past. It really seems to be helping that he's actually able to be at stretch four, which I think has always been his more natural position. Definitely what he's going to be as a pro. So he's become a three level scorer. I mean, he's a decent enough outside shooter. He's really still going to do most of his work in the paint, but having a physical complement like Key to help out, because I mean, again, Kyle Young, they have a hard time keeping healthy. So you want to take it easy on his minutes. I think he had shoulder surgery again in the offseason or something. Their real problem is they are not very good at stopping dribble penetration. They miss Justice Suing very badly. Seth Towns has also, again, been out with another injury. They're supposed to get both of those guys back in relatively short order. And that might change the character of their defense enough that maybe you think about them as a higher ceiling type of group. But they're also going through some growing pains in their backcourt now, giving big minutes to the freshman Malachi Branham and also to Michi Johnson, who reclassified and came early. And
well, they only returned that kick 35 yards. Right, right. There's some progress. God damn.
I still, again, you can't make it up. I played Green Bay's defense. It was a great matchup on paper. Chicago scored 24 points and now has the ball again with time left and all three timeouts.
Well, their offense has only scored 17, though.
Yeah, that's true, but I don't know if Yahoo's algorithm is sophisticated enough to account for that.
Well, if you did bet Packers money line, though, you're still in good shape because Rodgers just celebrated with a mild shoryuken, but death stared the Bears bench while he did it. So he did a little celebration uppercut with this scowl on his face. He is a deeply weird man.
Yeah, for sure. Well, okay, so you wanted to get to a more amusing storyline, and I walked all over it. Where were you going to lead us next before I wanted to talk about Ohio State?
To the Maryland Terrapins, of course.
Aha, you say that, and yet just a couple hours ago, they pulled off a pretty impressive win against Florida.
Which makes it even more fun.
Yeah, either signs of life or dead cat bounce, whatever you prefer. From a team that made it all of 8 games into the season before their fans successfully cyberbullied their coach into quitting.
Yeah, see, they also participated in the Big Ten's early season embarrassment parade, losing to George Mason at home. And that was all she wrote for Mark Turgeon. At least that was all Mark Turgeon wrote, because it's not clear the extent to which he quit or was fired.
It supposedly was mutual. Supposedly the team is, or the school is going to pay him his $5 million buyout, which, man, I wish. I was saying this, I was sitting right where I am right now on my good old couch. And when I read that story, I just turned to my wife and I was like, what do I have to do to get to a place where I can quit my job and get $5 million for it?
Well, you know, see, and I'm thinking like, you know, as I'm thinking about kind of what I want to do with my career, what the next steps are, I'm thinking if I had the option where I could get myself fired and get $5 million and then just go into a regular kind of, you know, a regular kind of job, like the kind that I've been looking for. And then I'm sure I'd be asked, well, why, you know, what happened at your last job? Well, if I got fired, I would make $5 million. So I got fired because I wanted $5 million. And they'd pretty much have to be like, oh, fair enough. Or just reveal themselves as people that, you know, are completely dishonest about what they would do in that situation.
Oh, yeah. Any decent hiring manager there would say, you know what? That's good initiative and decision making. I like the judgment.
Yeah, I really like that you're self-starter, that you were very proactive about getting that $5 million.
So Turgeon's last two games, both losses. They played Louisville in a non-conference game, lost that. And I believe his last game was the Big Ten ACC Challenge where they lost to a thoroughly nondescript Virginia Tech team. it's got, but we have a little bit of context on this, of course, because our Maryland correspondent DJ Carver has been beating the drum to fire Turgeon for years. And like them winning a share of the Big Ten title a couple of years ago did not mollify DJ at all.
No, if anything, it really,
it pissed him off.
Devastated him. Anything else. He was devastated. He was just beside himself. He couldn't believe it.
Well, look, it's understandable because it, even with Anthony Cowan and Kevin Herter, they backed into a three-way tie by face planting. Like they should have had an outright conference title. And
but God damn it, man. If I were a little bit meaner, I would have sent some championship gear to his place.
Well, I wonder how he'd react. I don't even know. But we have context from him, though, about what exactly is it. So it pretty much had become unanimous within the fan base of this is not working. We have to get rid of this guy. But shortly before him leaving thing, the transfer of much touted freshman forward James Graham was announced. And like a day or two later, he was gone. And apparently it came out that Graham was frustrated that he had not been getting much playing time, because what Maryland's been struggling with this year is they don't have anybody who can shoot very well. James Graham was renowned as a really good shooter coming out of high school, and they won't play the guy. And he's like, well, what do I have to do to get on the court? And Turgeon was just like, you should transfer. Leave my team. I don't want you here anymore. The guy who, again,
and wait, we're three games into the season?
Maybe at that point, a couple more than that, but not much more.
Turgeon was still the coach, so it couldn't have been more than three.
So, well, it was probably games five. Well, like I said, he made it eight games in this year.
Oh, he made it eight games in. I thought it was after George Mason.
No, the rumors started after George Mason.
Okay.
That was the first thing. And I think that was probably the last straw for anybody who was going to go to a Maryland game and potentially support him. Like, they were booed off the court after losing to Virginia Tech. It had gotten ugly. His high school recruiting, supposedly he had basically stopped trying. He was just relying on the transfer portal. And look, they got a couple good guys. Fats Russell, first of all, first name All-American, All-Name team. And Caduce Wahab from Georgetown, a center. So they imported a couple of useful players, but there's just not enough left. Like, he's not hitting the portal. He wasn't hitting the portal hard enough to totally build a team that way, the way like a Hoiberg would. And so he had those two guys that he brought in. And then it's like Eric Ayala and Hakeem Hart and Dante Scott. That's all that's left. That's not a team. It's the second year in a row that they've had freshmen leave the team before the end of their first semester with the team. He doesn't know how to talk to high school players anymore. He doesn't know how to communicate with the youngest guys on the team.
Just talk about a guy that just doesn't need to be doing this anymore. I mean, I got a lot of respect for Vontae Davis for just, as soon as it hit him, shit, man, I'm just not fast enough to be out here. I'm just not fast enough. Like this game has passed me by. And he realized, well, I mean, I just can't play anymore. I just got to be done. And it was halftime of a game.
Yeah. And so it'll be interesting, because if you're in Turgeon's position and you can't recruit anymore, he's never been viewed as an X's and O's savant. He's always kind of been the guy who gets the talent and his assistants make it go.
The fact that Brad Underwood keeps losing end game chess matches to him, for instance, maddens me to no end. All the guys in the conference to lose those to.
Presumably you've seen your last of those. I don't know what.
Yeah, we have a chance now.
But I mean, the information that came out after the end of his tenure there does not paint a flattering picture of Mark Turgeon. So it's difficult to imagine that he's going to be seen on patrolling another Big Ten sideline anytime.
Not at all. And also, I mean, shit, it's not even like getting rid of him did all that much, because they still lost Northwestern.
They did. Yeah. It was the first game. It was like 2 days after he left, though.
But like, who does that?
Well, sure. But speaking of, let's go ahead and get to Northwestern then. So they played a mostly squishy non-conference schedule. There's nothing in here that's going to prove to you that they're really improved. They did also lose to Providence like Wisconsin did, as well as Wake Forest. However, perhaps one of the low-key, more entertaining moments of the year so far, when they just fucking housed Tom Crean's Georgia, which is apparently going to be absolutely terrible this year. They had a bunch of transfers out and a cut, and you know, Anthony Edwards declared for the draft, and they just did not replace those guys. They grabbed like low level and junior college transfers at the last second to slap a roster together, and it's going to be bad. So good time to play Georgia if you're Northwestern. Aside from that, like we said, they had the fortune to get Maryland in their first game after the Turgeon thing went down. As with everyone else, they've got a front court player who looks to have made kind of a star turn. Pete Nance is finally showing signs of being the player that Northwestern needs him to be. Still not the deepest scoring punch you would see in the conference. They basically got the guard, Boo Booey, the wing, Chase Audige, and the front court guy, Nance. Occasionally, you'll get a decent game from Ryan Young or somebody, but still just a little bit shallow in terms of scoring punch. And there's not a whole lot in the way of big-time opponents to measure them against yet.
It is Northwestern basketball because they've got multiple guys that just, like, you hear their name and it's got nothing to do with their performance. You're like, oh, God, I'm just sick of hearing this particular sequence of syllables. It's very weird. Boo Booey and Chase Audige. They just always have to have a couple of those guys on Northwestern basketball where you're just like, that's kind of an awkward name. I'm just sick of hearing it.
Kind of, but they are also a very experienced team. So we've been hearing some of these names for a long time.
Yep.
All right. So now to finish our turnaround the conference, we have two teams left to discuss by my count. Although it would be pretty funny if we just completely accidentally leave somebody out. We'll leave it to you all to read into that and whether we did it on purpose or not. We have a team that has been off of expectations in a very good way and a team off expectations in a bad way. What would you prefer to do first?
Well, look, these two teams have a lot in common. For instance, they both played a game yesterday.
Yeah.
And they also both had coaches that we were just kind of like, I'm not sure what's going on here. And then they started off hotter than hell.
Yeah. And what you refer to there is at the time the hire was made. So we're talking, yes, of course, at the about time Minnesota the hire and Michigan, made. Ben Johnson, Juwan Howard, respectively.
Because they underwhelmed us greatly.
Yeah. And it
at the time they were hired.
For Michigan, it turned out far better than they could have hoped. Not in year one, but year two, huge step forward. Minnesota, we'll start with Minnesota. Why not? The results so far are pretty promising. So Ben Johnson, again, the former Richard Pitino assistant who then went to become an assistant at Xavier. It just seemed like such a strange decision for Minnesota to fire Pitino to bring back one of his former assistants as the head. Not a guy who had taken a head coaching job either. But anyway, that's what they did. Almost the entire roster left of everybody who – so Eric Curry was able to come back. He's finally healthy and they're getting contributions from him. The only other guy who would have been back from the previous year's roster was Isaiah Innan, and he's now out for the year.
He's now out?
I think he's out for the year. Like, yeah.
Okay, Innan is out.
Innan is out. And, they hit the transfer portal, and I don't know that I've seen this before that I can think of off the top of my head, where Peyton Willis comes back, a guy who started, played a few years at Minnesota, transferred to College of Charleston, and then – the new coach comes back. He's like, hey, remember me? We used to kick it, right? And so bring him back. He's been very good for them. And they found a couple other hits in the transfer portal with guard EJ Stevens and sort of a combo 3-4 guy, Jamison Battle, who's been, I think, very impressive.
I actually do recall one situation where a Big Ten basketball player was on a team and then left, played some, you know, and went to school somewhere else and came back. It was Darius Paul for Illinois. He got kicked off. He went to JUCO and then he came back, but he got kicked off after his redshirt year. So he didn't play, but he did have two stints of not playing for us.
Yeah. So like I said, it's Minnesota's,
served two non-consecutive terms on the bench.
Yeah. Very much the Grover Cleveland of Big Ten basketball. And Minnesota has done it so far, playing a very short bench. It's true, they've not had the most difficult schedule yet, but they beat Mississippi State. It's a decent SEC team. And then in their first two, they gave Michigan State a good enough game at home. I mean, I don't think there was ever a serious chance of Minnesota winning that. But then they go to Ann Arbor and they get the win. And again, this is playing, they've got a very small rotation and a very limited number, so short in two dimensions, right? Where they really only play six guys and none of those guys, like Eddie Curry, I think is 6'9 or 6'10 maybe. Only guy they play who has any real size. And so going up against Michigan, who center footer Hunter Dickinson, and then also Musa Diabate, a freshman who I think runs like 6'10, 6'11. Sometimes they play both of those guys at once. Michigan had a big advantage on the boards and they couldn't do anything with it.
Yeah, it was a remarkably back and forth game with, you know, all the way. I mean, you look at the game flow and it's just like two lines crisscrossing each other up until about 5 minutes in the second half, at which point Minnesota kind of established an insurmountable lead. Michigan never really cut it down within one possession. After
I watched
that.
Enough of this that really, like, it's not like Minnesota figured out a way to, I mean, they did some things that frustrated Dickinson, who turned the ball over a few times. And I'm not going to declare this opinion just yet, but I'm going to say that what I've seen from Dickinson so far, it's not the kind of jump that I was afraid as a fan of another team he might make. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, kind of, because it feels like,
oh boy,
he was very effective because he had some really serious shooting on the outside that was helping him out. I mean, he remains a fairly good passer, but
that's true.
Yeah. Not an elite passer. And Michigan has not replaced the guys that they lost.
You make a good point. Yes. That the supporting cast around him, especially in terms of 3-point shooting, it's been a huge drop off from the likes of Mike Smith, Chaundy Brown, Franz Wagner, Isaiah Livers.
And when, like we said, so much of his game had been about, you know, being good at passing out of the post because he commands attention.
Right. So having the post moves to draw a double, but also having the shooters around him and the vision to pass out to kill you if you double them.
To wit, Michigan was 3-for-18 from beyond the arc in this game against Minnesota.
Yeah, and it's not, I mean, a decent number of good looks too. It's just they're not at a point yet where Devontae Jones is really not an outside shooter the same way that a Mike Smith was coming in as a point guard transfer. Eli Brooks, I think, is always going to be kind of hot and cold. I don't think you want to rely on him to shoot a ton of spot up threes like that. He'll give you clutch shots here and there, but not the kind of guy who has shooting gravity that makes you abandon covering Hunter Dickinson, right?
So I think we're kind of talking about both of these teams. I think it's fair to say, would you agree that Minnesota is the biggest surprise so far of the early season?
In a good way.
And that Michigan is maybe one of the bigger surprises in the downward direction.
I think so. The only other possible contender for that, I know some people thought Iowa was going to remain kind of in that top 5 to 6 range. I didn't see it. I thought they were going to be worse than they have been so far.
You could also argue Illinois, but I always thought their number 11 preseason ranking was a bit much.
Yeah, but I mean, considering that Michigan went from top, what, number 5 to start the season, 4 or 5,
yeah,
falling all the way out of the rankings.
They lost to Seton Hall, but then they got absolutely trucked by Arizona, which looks very good. Again, my team recently lost to them, but
you gave a much closer margin. You gave Arizona much more of a fight.
And it was definitely pretty reasonable to assume we could have won that game. But
if you had your starting point guard, you would have won that game.
Yeah.
That's why I'm sort of putting a pin in judging Illinois, and I'm willing still to be patient with Michigan. I still think that the talent is ultimately going to win out.
They're very young.
Yeah, they are young, and also even the veterans they have are mostly transfers. Really, when you look at what they bring back from last year's team, guys who really played meaningful roles, it's Dickinson, it's Brooks, and it's Brandon Johns, and that's it. They have a couple other guys, you know, Terrence Williams, they've gotten in there here and there, but Zeb Jackson has been hurt. Jace Howard really hasn't contributed yet. It's not clear if he's going to, but other than that, it's all transfers and freshmen. Diabate has been the real thing so far. His ceiling to me, I think he profiles as a much better NBA player than Dickinson does, because as much as we saw, oh man, look at these practice videos of Hunter Dickinson shooting threes in an empty gym.
Yeah, I also saw some of those of Kofi Coburn.
Yeah, I don't think he's taken a single one since the season started. Don't.
No, he took two against Minnesota and missed both of them.
There you go. So by all means, have your 7-foot unicorn shooting threes at a 25% clip. The rest of us would love to see that.
Well, yeah, let's call him Hendrix Cobb for those of you that played NBA 2K21 as a center. There's just this storyline guy that, oh, he always plays the same position as you, but also he can do everything really well. So when you play as a center, this dude can knock down threes all day. So yeah, three, what I think are surefire tournament teams on Michigan's schedule in Seton Hall, Arizona, and UNC. Lost by two to Seton Hall, got trucked by the other two.
Yeah. And the other thing, I think really the biggest factor for them and whether they kind of hit their ceiling or get close to it is whether Caleb Houston better adjusts to the game or not. Because so far, he has not really looked all that prepared for college ball and the role that they're going to need him to play. But the talent is obviously there. And so, I expect Michigan to get better as the game goes on. That's, by the way, I'm perfectly happy that MSU's first game, I think we play both our games with them before mid-January. So I'm perfectly happy to have that be the situation because I think they'll be better, you know, Valentine's Day than they are Christmas.
So overall, if you look at the conference, we talked about, you know, surprises, disappointments. How are your expectations versus the beginning? Who do you think are going to be the teams that compete for the conference title?
I still think it's going to be Purdue looking down at the rest of the field and not just by virtue of their height. Again, I know that because really, like, if you look at the Rutgers result there, it's not like Purdue played all that bad of a game. Rutgers just shot the lights out and got a career game out of a first-round player in Ron Harper. I think most nights, if that's what it takes to beat Purdue, you probably still predict them to finish what, something like 16-4, 15-5.
Yeah.
I think that's probably good enough because there are a lot of other good teams. I think this is probably about an 8-bid league this year, but I don't see anybody who, if they're both playing roughly the same quality of game, Purdue should necessarily be afraid of. I think it's still their conference to lose.
Yeah. I mean, you basically have to always expect Michigan State, even if you don't know anything about the team, to be in the mix at this point. Ohio State has certainly looked the part in their conference games.
I mean, the other thing that I think you would keep an eye on is what really are we going to get from Wisconsin? They have to find a second scorer to complement Davis. And the other thing is, I think they've got to sort out their interior play too, because they're rotating a few guys through there, especially at the five. I'd like vote more than Crowell, but they seem to play them roughly equally. I think if they get something, it's not like they need huge production. Like, they don't need the guy to be Frank Kaminsky, but if they get something like 12, 14 points a night from those two guys together, I think that's going to go a long way. They've got a decent, Tyler Wall probably has to be their second banana, but it's going to be the Davis show. And they'll go as far as he can take them. The thing is, I don't know if a Jordan Taylor kind of build works for Wisconsin the same way now that it did 10 years ago. I think the conference is better, deeper, and stronger at the top.
I'm going to try to flex as little as possible, but we also have not seen the final form of Illinois yet. Of course, a lot of these teams, you can say they get better. I mean, Illinois has tended to over the last couple of years lose some really stupid games in December and early January under Brad Underwood, but get better over the later part of the conference schedule. But the difference, of course, this year is Andre Curbelo has not at any point this season been healthy, even when he's played.
Yeah, and so hopefully once he's able to get back, he won't have any lingering, because it's a combination sort of concussion neck injury, isn't it?
They haven't given too many details, but it really does sound like it's sort of lingering after effects, you know, because you can clear concussion protocols and still be affected by a concussion.
Yeah, so hopefully he's able to get back and be his normal self, because that would obviously, I mean, given that they have shooters around him now, Frazier, Plummer, let him cook with Coburn. Maybe they'll finally run a pick and roll, although I doubt it.
Illinois would be the one
that would have the horses to go toe-to-toe with Purdue.
And you've seen what Arizona did to them with the press, and you saw what Iowa did with them with the press. And
you just gotta hope that you get him back quick enough that you don't drop another two or three conference games that you probably would have won with him, you know?
Well, I'm hoping that we're saving him to put down a lusty 40-point beatdown on a terrible Missouri team in coming up in a week and a half here.
Here's open.
Absolutely. So what else are you seeing that looks interesting before conference play for real starts.
Well, yeah. So let's go ahead and finish up then with a quick look at the upcoming schedule. And I gotta say, we kind of front-loaded our non-con as a conference. There's that, and that's to be expected. This time of year, between finals and the conference schedule approaching, even maniacs like Tom Izzo tend to lighten up a little bit on the schedule. But a few things that our folks out there might find interesting. Of course, the Crossroads Classic is always of interest to our neighbors to the southwest in the Hoosier State. That's on the 18th. You'll have Butler versus Purdue and Indiana versus Notre Dame. I think both those games ought to be wins, even though Notre Dame just did knock off Kentucky this weekend. So you've got that. And on the same day, you also have Ohio State playing a non-conference with that same Kentucky team out in Las Vegas. So that'll be a good game of hoops on Saturday. The following week, as you mentioned, we do have bragging rights on the 22nd.
Missouri is just terrible. Their fans are definitely not going to show up because they never do if they've got even the hint, the smallest hint of adversity coming their way. But Missouri got punched in the face by their own satellite campus at home by double digits. They got rocked by about 40 by Kansas most recently.
Yeah.
Their fans have discovered a clause that Quanzo Martin's not allowed to be fired without cause before May 2022. That's how this is going. Their fans are looking at when it is possible to fire Quanzo Martin. I, of course, hope they don't fire him before Brad Underwood can prove that he can beat them without LaRon Black, because Illinois has been substantially better than Missouri the last 2 years and still lost to them.
So that's basically it for the big ticket non-conference games coming up. If you are interested in seeing any particular team, you know, for example, whoever your conference team plays first, if you want to get a look at them, the entire conference plays a tune-up game against your various cupcakes over the 29th and the 30th. Most of the conference plays on the 29th, but a couple games on the 30th as well. Cannot say I'm going to be watching that because I'm going to be on my way to Atlanta for the Peach Bowl. So that'll be kind of your last chance to get a look at any upcoming opponents that you're curious about, to kind of see how they're looking. Guys you want to watch out for. That'll be the 29th and the 30th, that tune-up slate. So I think that about concludes it for our first. Didn't I tell you? We never managed to keep it tight, but I feel it's important to be thorough, and hopefully everyone out there gets some benefit out of this. If nothing else, I'm just sitting here very glad that I didn't play Aaron Jones as the Packers barrel towards the end zone, giving the ball to A.J. Dillon instead.
As a Packers fan, I'm just glad they're finally giving the ball to A.J. Dillon in short yardage.
Your source for Big Ten Talk, it's Off Tackle Empire.